Hello and welcome to
2 o'clock with Kella.
Bring your tea
and leave with more.
Hello.
Hello, welcome back.
Welcome to another episode of us standing Paul Mescal.
I still can't. I'm still obsessed with this man.
Yeah, and with Andrew Scott as well.
Oh my days. I mean, yeah. I'm sure if you're listening to this, or just everyone ever who's on the internet, around the time when they were doing press for All the Worst Strangers, which is what we're going to talk about today, saw all those videos and interviews and everything with the two of them, and you just cannot deny that they are just such an electric pairing.
Yeah.
They are just incredible together, and I'm just obsessed with seeing the two of them together, and I love their friendship, and they just, the chemistry is just so good.
So good. You can tell that they're best mates. Wow, I don't know. That's the vibe they're giving off in the press junkets anyway. But
it really
they definitely at least get on really well, and you can see that in the film, and it makes it so much better.
Yeah.
It's just about them too, really.
Well, literally, and there are four characters in this film. And
a waitress.
And a waitress, yeah, I was just thinking that. Four characters, a waitress. And it's just incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my feelings on it. I know that yours are slightly different. Because we haven't really spoken about this.
No, we've been restraining ourselves from it. Because we were like, no, we're going to do a whole episode about this. So we better hold off. And now I'm hoping and praying that I remember enough of the film to discuss with you.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I'm sure we will. Because it probably was about a month ago that we did
I
watch
think
it.
So. Yeah. No, but, okay, I think objectively, I get you saying it's incredible. I'm like, yeah, it is. Like, their acting at least is incredible. I'm not a big fan of the film, though.
Okay.
But I wouldn't fault them in it.
Yeah.
But before that.
Hey Ella, what have you been consuming this week?
Well, this week I jumped on the bandwagon, or shall I say, the dragon, a little bit late. I know we've already discussed it a little bit, but I finally read Fourth Wing, which, if anyone knows anything about just, I guess, just kind of book talk, or just what's been popular and what's been just incredible over the past few years, like Fourth Wing was one of those big ones, and I don't know why it's taken me so long to read it. Maybe because I haven't properly read like a new fantasy book in a while, and I thought it was going to be more YA fantasy than it is, but it's actually more adult romantasy, which is definitely having a massive boom at the moment with just in the industry with everything. But I finally read it after being on the waiting list at the library for ages, because I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna like it enough to buy a copy. So plus, I don't have any space on my bookshelves for any more
books.
No,
you don't.
I literally have them piled up on my windowsill and my bedside table, so I physically do not have space, so I'm not allowing myself to buy books, so I'm getting them from the library.
What about if I give them to you? I think I already have two that I'm like, oh, I actually need to give to you.
And I will never say no to books.
But this is the thing, because I'm the complete opposite. I get rid of all of mine, so they go to you.
Yeah, so I need to buy myself a new bookshelf and find some space for it. Anyway, beside the point, I read Fourth Wing. I loved it. I thought it was really fun, really good. Yeah, I don't really know what else to say apart from I just loved it. I loved all the fantasy elements in it. I mean, I love dragons, and I feel like not enough fantasy books have dragons in them. They normally go down more of the kind of fairy kind of route, it feels like. I quite like this kind of warrior dragon vibe going on, and the romance in it, like, you know, we love a good romance, and boy oh boy does she write a good romance. A good, like, it's a mix of enemies to lovers and kind of slow burn, but kind of also just very intense, very on it. And then you've kind of got like
just
the best
burn.
friend who's also pining after her sort of thing on the side, and you've got some really good friendships in the book as well, and It just seems to cover a lot of bases really well. So I very much enjoyed it. And now I'm waiting for Iron Flame to be available and I'll read that one.
Ooh.
I'll let you know what I think. But yeah,
Yeah.
that's me.
Hey, Kerry, what have you been consuming this week?
I have also been reading about Bad Boys, but like actual bad, like you're not okay, boys. Well, not even boys.
Okay.
That was a really bad segue. I've been reading a book called Monsters, and the subtitle is A Fan's Dilemma, I think, something like that, by Claire Dellera, I think. And have I already spoken to you about this book?
I don't think
I can't
so, no.
remember. Okay. It's on Spotify. I'm using my 3 hours to listen to it. Highly recommend. I've wanted to read this for ages because it is about what we have had so many discussions about, and that is the problem of separating the art from the artist. It's an entire book about that, and whether you should separate them or not, and how to go about doing it. And it doesn't tell you, yes, you should do it or not do it. It's not really that, but it's just exploring different examples of, which she just uses the word monsters for these people she talks about.
Interesting.
But she talks about whether that's a good word choice for that. But it's essentially, she just goes through like a, it's all, I think she calls it more like a biography of the audience rather than of the men, because it is mainly men themselves. And so she starts off talking about Roman Polanski and her personal experience of watching his films and how much she loves them, and she whether it's acceptable for her to still watch them and enjoy them or not. And she brings up so many interesting elements. Like she goes on to talk about Woody Allen and how she really doesn't like watching some of his films because what he's accused of really resonates isn't the right word, but like she's been personally affected by a similar situation. And she talks a lot about like, does it depend on whether these monsters are making any money from you, or like if they're dead, or does it overall just depend on how bad the thing is versus how bad their crime is versus how great their art is? And then she goes on to talk about, at the moment I'm on a, I mean I'm quite, I think I'm maybe like 3/4 through, 2/3 through, I'm not sure. And I've just read about women as monsters, and it's super interesting because she's talking about how for the men in the book it's more so that they'll be pedos or they'll be rapists or other awful things. And then with the women that she's talking about, it's more so that they're being bad mothers. And how it's
Ooh.
interesting that that's as far as it really goes for them. And these are all people in the public eye that she's talking about. Like, so after Woody Allen, I think, I mean, she did a chapter on J.K. Rowling actually. And she talks about so many people, and people I didn't even know were problematic. She goes from like David Bowie to Picasso. I didn't know David Bowie did anything problematic, so I had a shocker there. But I could talk about it for ages. It's really, really interesting. I as I said, I feel like we've had this conversation so many times, and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know. Should I watch it or not? Like, do I still
Yeah.
listen to Michael Jackson? And she's talking about, say, with him, is it acceptable to listen to Jackson 5 maybe, but not him, because he wasn't a monster at that age. But then also, he's pretty much a child there. And then are you associating with how he treated children? So it just throws up so many questions, and she talks about it in such an interesting and self-aware way that I highly recommend it. And her reading it as well, I think, really adds to it.
That sounds so fascinating.
It
Like,
really
and I
is.
feel like that's such an important topic of conversation, like always, but even more so now, I think people are becoming more aware and questioning these things more so than they ever used to. And I think that's really, I'm definitely going to have to read this at
You
some
have
point.
to
It
read it.
sounds so interesting.
And I'm not a massive non-fiction reader at all, but
Yeah.
it's so accessible, and I just, yeah, I cannot wait to carry on reading it. I keep going like, oh my God, I'm so excited. I have time to sit and listen to it now, and I put it straight on. I'm like, right, So
love that.
we need to, yeah, you need to read it. We need to discuss it properly.
Yes. Also, very quick bonus, what I've been consuming.
Oh
I just
yeah.
shout out Dune Part 2 because I saw it
Yes.
at the weekend and it was incredible.
Oh my God. Yeah, I completely forgot that we've now seen it. Yeah, and we haven't
There's
even spoken about it because we had
no, we
so many other
haven't.
things that we were debriefing on. Much more important things.
Yeah, because back when it was meant to be released in November, we were going to do an entire episode on the Dune franchise, but then it got delayed. But now it's come out and we've seen it, and I really loved it. I don't know what you thought of it.
I think if it was half an hour shorter,
That's
I would have enjoyed it a lot more. But you know me, I've got
is a
that big
long
book
film.
fear, and I've got the big film fear as well, it turns out.
Yeah.
I think it's a difficult one for me to judge because I want to approach it objectively, but then how do you do? It's all about personal taste, isn't it? Like, how do you really? And it just isn't really my thing. But
Yeah.
I actually really like the first film.
Yeah, I think the first one does such a good job at kind of creating that world and setting the atmosphere and introducing
Yeah.
the characters. I think it's like it feels quite a mellow film without it actually being very mellow.
Yeah.
I don't know if that
Yeah,
makes
I
sense.
get what you mean. I think technically it's astounding. I honestly, I was so shook at the cinematography, the special effects,
My God, I know.
all that kind of thing was mind-blowing. But it's just the actual plot itself, and again, character's really cool. The actual plot doesn't, it's not really my thing, so I don't
Yeah.
know. And I was a bit, I found it a bit tedious towards the end, but yeah, absolutely fair play. Like, my dad said the same thing, he thought it was really amazing. Same as you, and I wouldn't say that it wasn't. Can I just also quickly say, okay, you know, have you seen the memes where it's something like it'll say Paul breathes and then it's still got to go in like, ah! I love
That's
it.
so funny because I've seen them being put on so many things, and then so many things that just aren't even related to the film at all, and it's just so funny.
Yeah, I
It's
love
just
it.
that picture of Javier Bardem's face. But no,
Yeah, such fun.
it is incredible, and I think just the character arcs for literally all of the characters within that film are insane. Like,
Yeah.
they're all going through such these kind of growths and arcs that I feel like you don't see to the same extent in many other films. But I
No.
think it's just incredible. Anyway, we're not going to get carried away.
No.
We're talking about Dune. We're going to jump into talking about All of Us Strangers, a 2023 or 2024, because 23 because it came out in America last year. But didn't come out here until February.
Yeah, a recent film.
Yeah, a recent film by Andrew Haig, written by him, based on a Japanese book by, what's his name? Oh, where's his name gone? Tachi Yamada, called Strangers, based in Tokyo. But for the film, Andrew Haig based it in modern day London. And it follows, to quickly summarize. Let's summarize. It follows the story of Andrew Scott, who plays Adam, and he's a screenwriter who's moved into a new tower block of flats in London. There's only a couple of them living there at the moment. And he has a chance encounter with his neighbour Harry, played by Paul Mescal, and it seems to have a it has a big impact on his life. And at the same time, he goes back to his childhood house and stumbles in and meets his, spoiler alert, his parents as ghosts, and kind of it follows his relationship with Harry and his relationship with his parents and kind of his identity. And because his parents both died when he was 11 or 12 in a car crash, and he's now at the same age that his parents were, so he's kind of dealing with that and kind of coming out to his parents and everything as well, and his ghosts, and it's just, yeah, there's lots going on, but I think that's a very kind of vague general
Yeah.
setup.
And the reason, I can't remember, you might have said this, but the reason why he initially goes back to visit his parents is because his next screenwriting project is based on his childhood. So he's
Yeah.
going through all his childhood memories, so he goes back to visit the house.
Yes. And a fun bit of trivia for you. The house that they use as the childhood house is actually Andrew Haig's childhood house. Andrew Haig, the director and screenwriter, which I think is another really interesting piece of kind of meta narrative
Yeah.
within this, the fact that he chose to use his own childhood home
Yeah.
as Adam's childhood home is very interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
No. I wonder how much the decor changed, like with the new people living in, and I mean, would they have changed? Like, as in, would the production team have changed much of the house? Surely not when they were filming it.
I don't know, because I don't know whether it was just the outside that was his home or whether they actually filmed inside.
I'm pretty sure they
But
did
the
go
house
in.
looks so realistic, it does.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like there's much set involved apart from
No.
the apartment building
Yeah.
diner, but I'd be interested to know.
Yeah. My first question for you is, how quickly did you realize that the parents were ghosts?
I knew before I went into the film. I
How?
don't know how, but
You
I'd
know
read it
everything.
somewhere or I'd seen something. So I already knew, so it wasn't a
Oh.
surprise for me. And I wonder how I would have seen the film had I have not known that
Yeah.
they were ghosts. But I knew from the get-go that they were. And
Yeah,
maybe because
okay.
I'd seen some like interviews and talk show bits from them, and I don't know whether maybe one of them said something. I don't know.
Yeah,
But
maybe.
did you know?
No, this is it. Well, because
Oh,
you
interesting.
always seem to know that things are going to happen. We're just talking about this with
Yeah.
Baldwin.
I think because I sometimes predict things, but also I sometimes accidentally stumble across these spoilers and just kind
Yeah.
of don't stop myself reading them. It's
Well,
a very bad trait.
I think you're good at picking up on clues and working things out, whereas I just kind of don't bother. I just
Yeah.
go along with it, and then I'm like, wait, what?
Took me a minute to get the whole Harry thing though. I think it behind my tears, that took me longer than it should have to figure that
That's
out.
so interesting, right? Because George didn't know until our friend George didn't know until the next day. He didn't get it that he had been a ghost the whole time, and I don't think it took me so long to figure out about the parents. We didn't. Well, it was just that when we were watching the trailer, I was thinking that is the worst casting ever. They are so young. They should not be his parents. And then I was watching it, and then I was like, oh, actually, do you know what? That's my bad. I'm so dumb by knowing that. But it took me a little bit, or well, quite quickly, they say like something about how his. They died in a car crash or whatever. But I thought that originally it was just that he hadn't seen his parents in ages and he'd been estranged maybe when he came out and they didn't accept him. I thought
Okay,
that's what it was, him coming back and they were and then welcoming him back in and being like, oh, it's nice that you actually like we can get on now. So it's still, yeah, it took me too long. But with
Yeah.
Harry, I knew because I mean he walked into the bathroom and then there was his body was in there. So how did George not know? Nothing against her, but I'm so slow and I actually saw that. So it's more reflection on me being chuffed that I was like, yes, I got it, because I never see anything.
Yeah. But no, it took me in that moment where you see his body, and it took me a minute to clock the clothes he was wearing to then relate that back to the clothes he was wearing at the very beginning. And then I was like, Like, and then he walks in the door and you're like, oh, okay.
Oh, I don't know if I noticed the clothes. I think when he was first in the bar, oh God, I should have trigger warned this. Well, yeah, trigger warning. When he was first in the bath, I thought that maybe he'd only just killed himself then.
That's
And
what
it
I
was
thought
when,
initially as well.
yeah, and then it was when he walked in the door, and he said something about like, yeah,
Oh,
like I
why did
only
no one
wanted
tell
that
me that?
drink or something.
Oh, yes,
And
yeah.
I was like, oh my God. So actually that was it was that first night. He
Yeah.
said something about it. And I was like, oh, oh my God. Yeah.
That entire bit is so heartbreaking when he's saying things like, why did no one find me before? And then when he was like, I was just so scared and alone that night. I just needed someone. And
Yeah.
absolutely broke me. I was sat there in the cinema sobbing. I mean, there were so many points in this film where I was crying.
My God.
I was very moved by this film. It's a very moving film.
Yeah, such a sad film.
I know.
God, I say so I thought before I saw it that it was going to be more of a sweet, wholesome romance. And then it wasn't, it just shattered me.
I
It was
know.
so sad. I thought they were going to get married. No.
No, because their romance is so beautiful.
It is. Oh.
So sweet. And I mean, okay, upon reflection, looking back at it, of course it's all very sweet and perfect because like it was a ghost or whatever. But still, just it's just so beautiful. And like we mentioned before, the casting and the way the two of them are together on screen is just something else. They work so well together. They're such kind of interesting individual characters, well, and seeing them open up to each other and be vulnerable and share things about their lives with each other was just really, really sweet.
The only thing for me though was that I found the overwhelming sense of sadness a little bit boring. And I know it was intentional, but overall I thought that the film was very sexy. But yeah, it makes so much sense that it's adapted from a Japanese novel because it was so like it's the exact same as some of the like what's that like Heaven and I haven't read it, Breast and Eggs and whatever the other one was,
Oh, yes.
All the Lovers in the Night. It was so that energy of not that much happening and it being character led, and I just was bored. But that it's only because of personal taste again, and that just being a kind of film that it was, and it's more of a genre thing, and that genre just isn't for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I think that's totally valid as to be why you didn't like it.
Yeah, like it's nothing against the film itself, it's just more like, oh, that's just not the kind of thing that I like watching.
And like, that's totally valid.
Yeah, like I still appreciate it, which is why I'm excited to have this discussion with you, because I think it's an interesting one to talk about.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
mean, what scenes really broke you?
Oh my God, there was so much because I feel like you're almost watching two films at once, which cross over with the whole storyline of Adam and Harry and then Adam and his parent. And I think there are both so many like beautiful, heartwarming scenes within each of those, but also the heartbreaking ones. Like that moment where it's just him and his mum in the kitchen. When he's coming out to her in the kitchen, and the way she reacts and the things she says to him just absolutely crushed me. And like that's me saying this as a straight female woman. Like, I cannot imagine how that scene must have felt to write, to be in, to watch, just everything as someone who has gone through something like that. And it's not even like she like just starts screaming and shouting at him or anything. It's not that. It's like that kind of anger in a way is so much more subtle and almost feels more hurtful of how she delivers it and the things she says. And I couldn't.
No, it's more so the seeming lack of emotion in that she's not screaming at him and saying, get out. She's more so just putting on a stony face and saying, it's the same thing as in Rocket Man when the mum just goes, well, hope you know you'll never be happy. It's the
And
lack
it
of
just
warmth, the lack of any emotion,
feels so
really.
British. Yeah. When in that moment, what you need more than anything I can imagine is love and kindness and
A hug from your
warmth
mum.
from that person you're telling it to. Like, and from a parental figure as well. Even more so. So that was so hard to watch.
And he, especially because he's imagining it, and so
Yeah, that's even worse.
it has that layer of he's kind of doing it to himself. You don't know what the mum would have said, but it's even more heartbreaking in that he's kind of punishing himself.
Yeah.
And I think you always imagine the worst case scenario. Well, not always, but I do in a lot of situations. So that's just so heartbreaking that he's imagining the worst possible situation, and he thinks that's what his mum would say, and his mum that he can never actually have that conversation with just makes
Yeah.
it all heartbreaking.
Yeah, that is so true. It really is. Because that adds the whole it being imagined for him, adds an entire, like you say, a whole new layer to how you view every single scene in this film. And I think it's interesting that, because you would have thought, oh, if he's just imagining this, if it was like a daydream as such, everything would be kind of perfect and going exactly the way he wanted to. But it feels like it very much reflects real life in the ups and downs in those moments that he experiences with his parents. And I do wonder whether some of that comes from the fact that he's a screenwriter and it's almost his job, well, it is his job and his living to recreate real life within fictional moments, which makes it feel even more believable and real. Because I think having him as a screenwriter solidifies that even more. Everything feels very thought out in this.
And I think another layer to that, with him being a screenwriter, is not only is he deciding how his parents would react to certain situations, is that he's also deciding the pace at which his relationship's going.
Yeah.
Well, you realize at the end when you find out that Harry's a ghost, well, not always dead, whatever, that he is also able to control maybe the kind of person he's with, the kind of love that he has.
Yeah.
It's interesting that when he's revisiting his parents, and a lot of the things that maybe he feels are unfinished with his parents are to do with his sexuality, that he decides to conjure up some ghostly lover, like
Yeah.
at the same time. Like, it's interesting that it's not just the parents that are the ghosts, that is Harry as well.
Yeah.
And it's like he can own everything he has to deal with in some kind of imagined way, so that he has complete control over it.
That is very true. Building on that, I'm
Yes.
not sure what my answer to this would be,
Okay.
but do you think that he was okay? We'll just talk about him imagining Harry for the moment.
Okay.
Ask about the parents. Do you think he was conscious that he was imagining Harry, or do you think he was convinced it was real?
Oh, that is a good question.
Because I'm not sure whether he
Do
knew he
you
was
know?
doing it or whether it was almost accidental.
I mean, there's an element of him knowing the whole time, but choosing to suspend his disbelief because I think it's just what he needs at that time. As it's because it actually, when you know, it does feel so orchestrated. And but the bit of for me, for his spanning works, is when he tries to get Harry to meet his parents. And again, it's that. It's a difficulty because he knows that his parents are dead for certain, and he knows he's not actually talking with his real parents. But yeah, it's interesting with Harry because, yeah, does he have that certainty that Harry's dead? Does he, yeah,
But I'm not
actually,
convinced he knows Harry's dead
no,
until he turns up at his
okay, I don't
apartment.
think he knows he's dead, but does he know he's imagined?
Does he know he's imagining him?
Yeah.
And that again is like an even like another layer.
Because if he's also imagined, could he get him, imagine him meeting his parents? But does he just actually not want him to meet his parents? Or is it that if he did meet the parents, then it would expose that also he is a ghost?
Because at that point, when he takes him to the house and he says how he can see them in through the window, and Harry's there in the garden as well. And then I think later on, when they're talking to each other, he was like, oh, I saw them. But in his imagining, Harry saw his parents.
Yeah.
And I do wonder whether the fact that he didn't actually meet the parents was something in Adam's own mind that was stopping that from happening.
Yeah.
Because if it had been the case where the person who he was in love with was able to meet his parents, that would have been too much of a perfect moment for all
Yeah.
together, that Adam wasn't willing to give himself that moment where he. Because he was never able to introduce someone he loved to his parents. And even in this kind of daydream, he's not allowing himself that level of joy in a way that that would give him.
Yeah.
Even if they are pretend, he's not allowing himself that
Yeah.
happiness because he knows that he can never actually get that for real. It would only be imagined.
Yeah. So does he end the film? Well, does he end his experience when he properly acknowledges and says
Summon God.
goodbye to all the ghosts?
See,
Does he end that like feeling happy, feeling relief, feeling better? Like, what does he gain from this? Does he feel at peace?
not convinced he's just because the very last scene of the film is that scene of Adam and Harry led in bed with each other. And it's almost, I feel like, from that moment where he either realizes or becomes conscious that Harry was a ghost this whole time, it's like he's kind of just succumbed to his own delusion where he's like, well, I'm gonna let myself have this sense of happiness even if it isn't real just because he craves it so much. So I'm not convinced he ends the film in a better position than the beginning because he's still equally as lonely and by himself as he was before. He's just maybe more delusioned than he was.
Yeah, he's become more deluded. It's a tricky one. Is he like, okay, so what is next for him at the end of the film? How's he going to carry on? Is he just going to descend into a complete state of hysteria?
Yeah,
What?
I don't know. Because he could, or will he use whatever this experience, like in the perfect world, he would use whatever this experience is to write about, and then, whatever. But I'm not convinced he does or he will. And I think that adds to just this overarching just sadness
I know.
of this film, because you're not left with any hope for
No,
him.
and it, nothing feels resolved for me. I mean, again, that's
No.
why I struggle with it, because I like nice, clean-cut things.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, so where are we now? Like, he's just not
He's
okay.
just still sad and alone, if anything,
No.
he's even more sad and alone than he was before. Like, he wasn't doing great to begin with, but now
Right.
he seems to be doing worse, and I can't see it getting better for him.
No.
Which
And
is
kind
really, really sad.
of it is. And I want to point out that this final scene when he go, well, not the final, but kind of the final scene with his parents, when he goes to the diner and then he gets
Yeah.
all that food for the drinks, whatever, for the three of them.
Oh.
I feel like that is the ultimate thing of like him just going absolutely delulu and off the rails.
Yeah.
It's like he's starting to like he's trying to drown himself physically, like as in emotionally he was cutting himself off and living in his dreamland, and now he's physically damaging himself by eating all that food.
Yeah.
I know it's only food, but still.
No, and I think it is very, very symbolic, like for multiple reasons in that bit, because it is for that reason that you said, but also it feeds into showing you that delusion that he has that they're really there, even though you know that they're not, and you know that he knows that they're not, but he's not willing to admit that to himself. And I think that's an issue he has throughout is, and you see that at the end, going back to the ending, you see that he is aware and he knows, but he's not willing to admit to himself that it is pretend and made up, because he's so much crave he really craves that company, and that something, and that love, and that happiness, and that companionship. But he's
And it
willing
just,
to
sorry.
delude himself throughout.
And it just goes to show how much of an impact your childhood and your parents
Oh,
can have
yeah.
on your relationships, because he can't essentially really move forward with a relationship and allow himself that happiness
No.
until he feels like he sorted out his childhood and his parents' reaction to his sexuality.
Yeah, and you always hear about how, well, everyone knows how kind of formative your childhood years are and the relationship with your parents, but this does really, really show it in a way that I've never seen it on screen before.
For sure.
That whole scene with him and his dad
Oh
when
my
they're
God, yeah, I
sat in
want
the
to talk
living
about that.
room, and if I'm remembering rightly, it's literally him being like talking about how he didn't really, really hug him, or when things were going kind of wrong at school and whatever, and not him not being there for him in the way that he needed him to be until it was too late. And then that heart to heart that they have with each other in that moment, it almost seems to be kind of, it shows how both of them are kind of doubting and unsure how to kind of deal with that situation at the time. It's like it's like, oh, it would be so much easier if we just all knew that these were the things that each of us were thinking in these moments. And when he was like, oh, why did you never come into my room when I was crying? And the dad being, I didn't know what to do. And that is heartbreaking.
That was the most heartbreaking scene for me. His dad saying, "Yeah, I know that you again, but I know you're crying," and he had to do about it.
Because you're kind of brought up to think that your dad is going to be that kind of protective figure for you as a child growing up. And just that idea that his dad knew that these things were wrong. Well, in his head, he thinks that his dad knew that these things were wrong, but wasn't doing anything about it.
And yet he still loves him anyway.
Yeah.
If that's the heartbreaking thing, is that you can tell they both love each other so much. And it's just that, again, the lack of being able to express any emotion.
Yeah. And I think the thing that the kind of theme that runs through this entire thing, and they very explicitly say it as well at one point when he's the night after he tried to take Harry to go see his parents, and they're all in the bedroom, whatever. And he's like, "Well, I haven't had," they're like, "Oh, we've kind of, you can't come back here anymore, blah, blah." And he's like, "Well, I haven't had enough time with you. I need more time." And I think that is so much this running theme throughout the entire thing, that we never have enough time with the people that we love and who love us. And it's always so hard to say all the things you want to say.
And I think as similar to that, a massive theme in this is things left unsaid or things that you should have said. Like him wishing that he'd been able to say all these things to his parents before they died, and him wishing that he could have helped Harry and let him in his house before he
Yeah.
died. Although, Joe, I wouldn't have let Harry in personally. I'd be like, "You strange man, why have you been watching me from your window and now you're turning up drunk at my doors? Please stay away. I do not know you." Like, that so easily could have turned into him actually killing him. Like Harry
Yeah.
killing Adam, I wouldn't have let him in. But I was a bit scared of Paul, can't lie. I mean,
No,
where
that first scene
Harry?
is when, because yeah, it is a bit odd in the first place that the way that he's standing there at the window when there's the fire alarm. But also that first scene when he's up at the, when he comes to the door half drunk, it's such an odd mix of simultaneously very charming but very creepy and quite unnerving the way he is. And I think he plays into that so
No.
well.
Yeah, who knew Paul Mescal could play creepy?
Yeah, and he does it well. Like, I was proper unnerved. It's like, okay, if I was in Adam's position, I don't think I would have invited him in that moment.
No, I wouldn't have. And also another thing that is less astute and groundbreaking for me to say, but just a massive thing that kept playing on my mind, right? The whole time I thought, okay, I get that Adam has loads of free time because he's getting loads of money from writing these mega screenplays, right? But Harry, I thought, what is Harry's job? How does he have so much money to live in this flat? And to also just seemingly be around all the time.
Yeah, and I guess the most simple explanation for that is the whole, well, he's a ghost thing.
Well, no, exactly. Now it makes sense. But before I knew
But
he
I
was.
do get you, before that moment, it's one of those things where you're like, well, what do you do all day? Why can you just lie around? It's like, are you some form of screenwriter as well?
And then I thought, well, I should have known he was a ghost because, yeah, why was he always just there? Yeah,
Yeah.
that makes
And the
sense.
whole it always being in his place,
Yeah.
Harry's. Like when you know and look back, you see all these little things that make you realize.
Yeah, I would watch it back, even if it was my fave, just because I think it'd be interesting to see all of those things that we didn't notice before.
Yeah. And like you see, like we said before, you see that whole kind of extra layer within the conversations that they have with each other, knowing knowing that they're imagined conversations
Yeah.
that he wishes he could have.
Yeah. And also, I think with him revisiting his, Adam revisiting his childhood and trying to fix it, and accept himself, I think there's an element of, because he's older than Harry, and he makes a point of it, of mentioning it, that he feels a little bit like a mentor to him, and maybe he is somewhat aware that probably something bad might have happened to Harry, or that Harry wasn't okay. And so in the relationship, he's almost a bit of a mentorship and trying to give him at least a good relationship or something like that he wished he could have had, because he feels like almost a, so he's of a different era to him.
Yeah, definitely. And I do think that age thing does play into it in that way. And you could almost, in a weird way, see it as that imagining of him is almost a younger version of himself.
No, I think that as well,
Yeah.
yeah.
I think that very much seems to make sense
Yeah.
within that and that kind of relationship he wishes he could have had and experienced. Either with Harry being a younger version of Adam, or Adam imagining himself as Harry's age
Yeah.
at that point. Either way,
Yeah.
seems to make the same sort of point.
Yeah. Can I ask as well, why do you think it was set in London, or do you not think it's that relevant?
I think it's a film that works to be set in a. I'm literally saying this based on the fact that I know that the book is based in is set in Tokyo, and this is set in London, and I think there must be something to do with this whole big city anonymity kind of thing that
Yeah.
you get from that, and I wonder whether that's it and whether it's kind of set in a big city to show just this one minuscule person's life who could so easily get lost in a crowd.
Yeah.
Also, he's quite a lonely man. Like, you don't ever hear any mention of friends or see them
It's true, yeah, he doesn't have any
or
friends
anything.
there, really.
It's almost like he's isolated. I feel like you get that sense of isolation. Even though you don't see any kind of big crowds, you don't really, can't really tell it's in a massive city apart from just kind of knowing from a few little hints they get. And I wonder whether there's something as well to do with the whole his house being in the suburbs, essentially,
Yeah.
him leaving the city and these kind of, when you're younger, these dreams of leaving and going to live and work in the big city where all your dreams are going to come true, but the reality of that hitting you. And
Yeah.
that's why I don't think it would work within like a little small town or a hamlet
Would
or
it
like,
work in Dublin, for instance?
yeah, I think it would work in any city
Yeah.
because I think as a viewer, you go into it, and I think this is the sort of film that relies on your awareness of a lot of things and that kind of those dreams of the city and your life in it and whatever. But I
Yeah.
think it just adds that extra layer to the story and that extra sadness. I think it's another way of adding that extra level of sadness. It's like, oh, the city should be so full of people and friends and opportunities, but that doesn't seem
It's
to be
not,
it for him.
yeah.
And he seems to be craving this kind of simple childhood
Yes.
life for himself. So that's what I think, but I don't
Yeah.
know.
No, thank you. That was interesting.
There was a lot of waffle there that definitely could have been condensed into fewer words.
No, thank you very much for that insight. It said sincerely.
But maybe that's just me delving into this too much and overthinking too
Oh, I love it though.
much. Because it literally could have been a tower block anywhere, because You don't really see any of the city at all.
No, that's what I thought, yeah.
You see, the most scenery you see isn't in the city, it's that park. Oh, we
Yeah.
haven't even spoken about that a bit. Okay.
Well,
That
I
park.
also was didn't yeah, that freaked me out, I can't lie.
Yeah, I was going to ask you because, of course, you probably didn't realize that was his dad at that point, and then obviously didn't realize that he was still a ghost. But that point where he's in the park and he's walking, and then just this man appears and is like
No.
beckoning him over, and it's
And I was
all
like, oh, this is dodgy, this is dodgy.
because it's a bit it's dodgy, but because they're the same age, it kind of seems to blur those lines. It's like, oh, is this like a weird form of like flirting,
I
like
know, it's
is
weird.
he kind of flirting with him and trying to like tempt him over, and like what's going on here?
It's like a bit
And it
stalkerish,
very
no?
much blurs the lines, and you're very confused. And even I was watching it thinking, I'm sure that, oh, what's his name?
Jamie Bell.
Jamie Bell. I can't remember what the character's name, but I was like, I'm sure that Jamie Bell plays his dad, but why does this look like they're going to start making out with each
It
other
did
again?
seem like a creepy, like, picking him up kind of thing, but I don't know if it's just because of the age.
But no, it does. It that scene does play as a picking up scene. I don't know if that's the term for the
Yeah.
scene, but it does play as that.
Yeah, it does.
And I think that was so deliberate.
Yeah.
But I can't quite decide why or what that was trying to say in
I
that
don't
moment.
know. I think it's just trying to do something a bit unsettling, personally.
Yeah.
But and because it the whole film is. It's not a happy clappy film.
No. But I kind of love a really sad film. There's something quite strange. I'm sure I've said something like this on the podcast before, but whatever. I feel like it's revealing a lot of myself. But like,
Your sadness.
I like a bit of sadness. Like, I'm not a sad person, I
No.
don't think. But I think there's so much complexity within it.
Yeah.
You can see that so clearly within this film.
Sometimes sadness seems more authentic and relatable than how they might represent the happiness. Would go from one extreme to the other. Like the happiness might be them in staying crazy rich Asians jetting off to this multi-million-dollar wedding, you know, as
Yeah.
opposed to like with sad things normally it's like, yeah, like we've all been with someone who's died, whatever, like we've all I don't know, I just, maybe it's a little bit more relatable.
Yeah.
Or
Yeah, I
nuanced,
do wonder.
maybe. Yeah.
But that's not to say that this, although it being such a sad film, it's also such a beautiful film and so much about love, both familial love and romantic love. I'm sure there's something to be said about self-love or lack thereof
Yeah.
as well. But also, it's a film about grief and loneliness, and is all of that all in one.
Yeah.
And I love when they mix all those emotions together. And like you have those really beautiful, lovely moments throughout the film where it feels like everything's going well, like, and he's having a great relationship and
Yeah.
getting to know his parents, and his parents are getting to know him and whatever. And then, but then there's those equally heartbreaking moments, like that entire diner scene where it's so lovely and beautiful but sad that he's essentially being able to say goodbye to his parents that he was never able to before, and the fact that he gives himself that moment to say goodbye
Yeah.
is really sweet. And I think it's really interesting that that also happens. I'm sorry, I'm talking so much in this episode.
I mean, I normally feel like I'm talking for
I'm just rambling,
it,
so
so I'm happy for you
I promise I'll let you talk in a second. I just want to say this one thing.
No.
But I think it's really interesting that that's the one scene where we have another character. It's a completely neutral, different space. Okay, it's not completely neutral because obviously they used to go there when he was little. But it's the only scene in the film that takes place within that environment. And the only scene where you have, apart from the nightclub scene,
Yeah.
where you've got another character who actually talks to him. Like, that is the only real person alive, okay, apart from Harry in the beginning, a live person that we see talking to him
Yeah.
there in the moment. And I think that there's definitely something about that goodbye scene taking place in that nostalgic place that is linked to his childhood, but not his childhood home, and not his. I don't know. I think there's something quite significant about that taking place there and having that waitress character as well. It almost kind of throws you back to reality.
Yeah, it's that mediator, isn't it, of getting him out
Yeah.
because he knows he has to say goodbye to them.
And he knows he has to kind of take that step into the real world
Yeah,
that
for
then
sure.
kind of crushed with the whole Harry thing just afterwards. But yeah,
Yeah.
very interesting.
Aww. Do you have final thoughts?
Final thoughts. It completely destroyed me, but I'd watch it again and again
Yeah, fair enough.
and again.
Yeah.
So take from that what you will.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts from you?
I just think they're an iconic duo. It's my
They are
final.
an iconic duo. If you haven't watched
That
any
was
of
my
the
main
movies
takeaway.
or anything with them in, do.
Yes. But I think just a quick blonde moment to end off, because I think we've hit the hour. Blonde moment.
Do do.
Forgive me if I said this before, but I thought, hey, Oscars, we always talk about the Oscars, it's our thing.
Yeah.
And Best Supporting Actress award was, how do you pronounce her name? Dav. I feel like we
Divine.
said it on here before because I feel like I said it wrong. Is it Divine?
I think it's divine. Well, that's what I think Graham called her.
Divine Joy Randolph.
Yeah.
Okay. She's incredible. I watched the holdovers actually when we were on the flight to and from New York. I was so crazy. I watched half of it on my friend. And wow, I agree with her winning. Okay, actually, I haven't really watched the other supporting actresses, but her performance was so mesmerizing in holdovers. Oh my God, she made me want to cry. I was so excited for her, so excited she won. But then I don't know, because I feel like maybe we're talking about the BAFTAs and her winning there, and I was like, oh my gosh, it was so fun.
But yeah.
But if I did speak about it then, give her a blonde moment, have another one, my love. And also, Emilia Dims, Strawberry Blonde, she was
Yeah.
presenting red carpet, she was doing an amazing job. I mean, there were so many cool women at the Oscars
Oh,
slaying, so.
so many. Yeah.
Yeah.
Always so much fun. Do love the Oscars.
Me too. The
And before you
fashion.
know it, we're talking about the Met Gala, guys, so just wait.
Oh, Met
Oh.
Gala. And we will be back with another episode of Extra Brew next week. And the week after, another episode in our Story of a Novel Without Men series.
Yeah.
There's lots to be looking forward to. And
Definitely.
then at some point, there'll be an extra brew. And then another episode about Paul Mescal film. So, more Paul content
There
on the way.
will. Our next film one is also a Paul Mescal film one, because we just cannot get enough of this
You just
man. Like, we should
can't
just
have
rebrand
without.
ourselves as the Paul Mescal podcast.
I know. Might as well.
And we need to get a new obsession.
No. Oops. But for now, thanks so much for listening to this episode. Hope
Yep.
everyone's doing okay because that was quite sad.
That was quite sad. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
It's a sad film. What can we say?
Yes.
Sad girls at heart. Anyway, hope you have a lovely week.
Yeah, we'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening to Tea O'Clock with Keller.
Join us next time for more.